The two categories are hardly monolithic. The more numerous Pentecostals of the older Assemblies of God are fundamentalist and scripture-minded, epitomized by former Attorney General John Ashcroft, who, on being sworn into office, also had himself anointed with cooking oil in the biblical manner of King David. A non-dancer and disbeliever in frivolity, Ashcroft, on becoming Attorney General, covered the bare breast of the Justice Department's large statue of the Spirit of Justice. In a vivid contrast, the small but fast-growing Vineyard churches and Calvary chapels, California-born, charismatic, and third wave, mix informality, unchurchly language, and soft rock music with what skeptics call the spiritual smorgasbord of charismatic experience from physical healing to speaking in tongues. Their story has been told sympathetically in Reinventing American Protestantism, Christianity in the New Millennium. However, critics have noted that the holy laughter cultivated in some Vineyard churches can degenerate. In 1995, the Toronto Airport Vineyard Church was booted out of the Association of Vineyard Churches for allowing it to include animal noises, barking like dogs, oinking like pigs, roaring like lions, and so forth. Some sociologists assert that elements of West Coast Pentecostalism, very much a minority nationally, have made a liberalizing cultural accommodation to the loose and mellow Pacific Coast culture, a so-called Californication of conservative Protestantism. By a careful synthesis of polling results, we can affirm that about 1 in 4 Americans, or 25%, are now affiliated with a church from this network of conservative Protestant churches, that is, fundamentalist, evangelical, holiness, or Pentecostal. Not quite 1 in 6, around 15%, are affiliated with the older denominations that used to be called the Protestant mainline. Still, the conservative ratio may be understated by leaving out America's million Mormons and million Jehovah's Witnesses, and perhaps also by pegging Pentecostals at a cautious 10 million adults rather than in the sometimes suggested 20 million range. On the other hand, the so-called third wave may be misplaced in the conservative category. This is no abstract inquiry. The fundamentalist, evangelical, and sectarian headcount helps to explain the poll findings in Chart 1 of such widespread popular belief in matters ranging from biblical inerrancy to the imminence of the end times. The national population does appear to be more sectarian and movement-driven, with a lower proportion of mainline Christians and fewer secular non-believers than common wisdom has assumed. Because these pages are principally concerned with the radicalization of U.S. Protestantism, they touch only lightly on overlapping phenomena within American Catholicism. However, Knoll and Stark and Fink see the Church of Rome as caught by some of the same trends that have sapped the mainline Protestant denominations, principally inroads by charismatic movements, widespread non-attendance, and rising losses to Pentecostalism. The Roman Catholic Church claims some 60 million members, but only half are frequent churchgoers. The sharp decline from 1965 to 1990 in church ability to recruit priests, nuns, and seminarians in the United States has been charted from the official Catholic directory by Stark and Fink. From 10.6 enrollments in seminaries for every 10,000 U.S. Catholics in 1965, the number plummeted to 1.1 in 1990. Until the last generation or two, their argument goes, the Catholic Church in the United States was an amalgam of outsider ethnic faction parishes, Irish, Italian, French, Serbian, Polish, Hungarian, et al. For this reason, Catholicism as an institution behaved more like a group of sects than an established church. Outsider psychologies and distinctive ethnic nationalisms were supporting pillars for the church, not debilitating weaknesses. As these were lost, and as the U.S. Catholic hierarchy followed the papacy's Vatican II liberalizations in the 1960s, ending masses held in Latin, voiding the prohibitions against eating meat on Fridays, removing impediments to Protestant-Catholic marriages, promoting Christian unity, the old Catholic hold weakened. Not everyone agrees, but Stark and Fink cite these changes to explain why, between 1964 and 1978, the percentage of U.S. Catholics regularly attending services dropped from 71% to 50%. Although Stark and Fink do not hypothesize the Protestantization of American Catholicism, they do promote an analogy between weakening faiths. Because Catholics can marry non-Catholics, can set foot in other churches, and can miss Mass without thereby committing a sin, less is being demanded of them, and less loyalty is being returned. As with Protestants, more decision-making and interpretation is being left to individuals and consciences. Many Catholic organizations and universities have measurably secularized. Pentecostal and other Protestant inroads among Hispanic Catholics have been described by theologian Andrew Greeley as an ecclesiastic failure of unprecedented proportions, trends that lead Stark and Fink to doubt that the American Catholic Church will be able to halt its transformation from an energetic 19th-century sect into a sedate mainline body. The point here is less to survey the various denominations. In examining the GOP electorate, we will revisit aspects of their size, ideology, and political geography from several perspectives, then to sketch the revival-prone sectarian and radical side of American religion. Its increasing presence is breeding a politics of cultural narrowness, moral and biblical bickering, revivalism in the White House, and international warfare to spread the gospel, fulfill the Book of Revelation, or both. Yet far from being a sudden national departure, religion's powerful role in U.S. politics and warfare goes back to the 17th century.